It was 1971, and the filmmaker Alan Power was working on a documentary about those who were living rough on the streets of South London. For the film, he and his crew visited impoverished areas like Elephant and Castle and Waterloo. At each place, interviewing those who lived on the streets, trying to find out more about their lives and what it was like to hold on to a life on the margin. Each interview was different. Sometimes people talked about their family histories. A lot of people wanted to talk about their families. Other times, it was how they ended up on the streets. Finally, though, after weeks of footage, they felt they had enough, and it came time to head to the editing studio to see what material they actually had to work with. Now, as is the case with any film, there were miles and miles of tape, scores of interviews with men around South London to sift through. And the editing process for a film is not unlike the editing process for writing an article or a sermon or the process of sculpting stone. As one seminary professor reminded us in seminary, the artistic process, it's not often what you put in, but what you leave out that makes the difference. And so it was for that documentary. The cutting room floor yielded reels of interviews and footage that never flickered across the silver screen. It so happens that one of the freelance audio engineers working on the post-production was a composer and a musician named Gavin Bryars. Bryars was just working on the audio mix of the film. He hadn't taken part in the film crew or anything else. And after the film had been mixed, one of the other sound engineers had a large reel of the magnetic audio tape with the recorded sound that wasn't used in the film and was now useless to the company. For Bryars, though, the reel of tape in and of itself was valuable, so he was glad to take it off their hands. But before he erased the audio on the reel, just for a moment, does everybody remember when audio used to be recorded on something that you could touch and cut and tape? Well, before he erased the audio, he decided to listen to those interviews again. And that decision to listen one more time changed the course of his life. Last week, we began our journey in Mark's Gospel for this year, and this week, we begin at the beginning. And in Mark's Gospel, there is no messing around. Mark gets straight to the point. There's no cosmological, theological statement like in John's Gospel, no genealogy like in Matthew's Gospel, no infant narrative like in Luke's Gospel. Mark starts in with a clarion call and gets right to the action. Now, the first line of this gospel really should not be overlooked. I know it's easy to do it because I did that the first few times I read right past it. It reads, "The beginning of the good news of Jesus Christ, the Son of God." I don't want to be simplistic about this, but especially now, in a world that increasingly feels chaotic, volatile, we must not forget that we are fundamentally people of good news. What we preach, what we pray, what we sing, what we live is good news. In Advent, our lives are anticipatory, we are preparing, and it's always grounded in this good news. And with this gospel, Mark's gospel comes into an immediate frame. Immediately. Get ready to hear that word a lot because Mark likes to use it. immediately we hear the words of the prophet Isaiah. "See, I am sending my messenger ahead of you who will prepare your way, the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, 'Prepare the way of the Lord, make his paths straight.'" At the very start, in what we believe to be the first telling of the story of Jesus of Nazareth, we are told to listen. And I believe it is important to pay attention to where this voice is coming from. Let's go back to the text from Isaiah one more time. The Isaiah text. "A voice cries out in the wilderness, 'Prepare the way of the Lord, make his path, make straight in the desert a highway for our God.'" Now Mark does something different with this. Listen to his text. "See, I am sending my messenger ahead of you who will prepare your way, the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, 'Prepare the way of the Lord, make his paths straight.'" What Mark is doing in his telling is saying that we already know the voice that is crying in the wilderness, and that voice is found in the person of John the Baptizer. And where he is crying from is essential, because John is not crying out from the center of Jerusalem. He's not out in front of the temple. Now this voice, like most of God's prophets, comes from off the beaten path, in this case by the River Jordan. And I hate to rain on anybody's parade, but as our seminarian Ryan can tell you, the River Jordan really is a small creek with a tremendous upside. Right? This is not the Thames. This is not the Seine. John is far outside the mainstream. He's crying out on the margin from the edge. And people are listening. People are coming in from the countryside. They're coming down from Jerusalem, all listening to the voice crying out in the wilderness. And it is crying out, "Prepare the way of the Lord, make his paths straight." The footage that Alan Power and his documentary film crew shot in Waterloo in 1971 was of all sorts of people living on the edge. And from time to time in the footage, in the middle of the busy street, as people were being interviewed, they would break into song, something from an opera or a pop song. But as Gavin Bryars listened to the audio tape months after the film had wrapped, as he listened more deeply, he heard something different, something that he had never heard before. It was a faint, warbling voice, heard barely on the edges of the recording, as it were. Something about it was remarkably compelling. So Bryars did his best to isolate that voice. As he filtered out the wash of sound, the street scene, the buses going by, the give and take of the interview itself, what he unearthed was the song of an old homeless man, someone not even seen on camera. And it was a fragile, barely recognizable hymn being sung over and over and over again. Listen. Friends, I don't need to tell you that it can be so hard to listen now. The sheer number of voices that compete for our attention minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day is staggering. The narratives are legion. One of my favorite signs that we came across in Oxford was a poster in a restaurant window. You see, in England at this time of the year, restaurants push hard to promote their Christmas dinners. Sometimes those dinners are on Christmas or are office parties in the weeks leading up to the holidays. It was just before Halloween that sandwich boards and posters started sprouting up like mushrooms, announcing their menu for the Christmas season. My favorite, though, was the poster from Patty Field's restaurant on the Botley Road that reminded us that Christmas is on the way. Book now to avoid disappointment. They're getting ready. This is to say nothing of the siren song to buy, buy, buy. The last couple of years in Advent, I've talked about Reverend Billy and the Church of Stop Shopping Now. But given the fact that this year stores opened up on Thanksgiving night at midnight, and that shoppers actually used pepper spray on other customers to have a clearer path to the bargains, it seems that the shopocalypse might actually be upon us. Is this the voice crying out in the wilderness? For those who don't know, for the last 3 months, I have been on sabbatical with my wife, Sarah, and it wasn't that exciting. But it was great. My wife, Sarah, and our boys, Benjamin and Jonah, were in Oxford, England. This parish, in its wisdom and generosity, offered me time to reflect and to study and to rest after having been called as the rector of All Souls Parish 3 years ago. And in this time of reflection, one realization came forward again and again. In the past several years, some remarkable and significant changes have taken place in this congregation. And now, with joy and some anxiety, we have come to a juncture, to a place where it will be imperative to listen as a body in order to know the way forward. Because in Berkeley, California, like in communities all over the world, there are mountains that need to be made low. There are valleys that need to be raised up. And it will be our work to serve side by side in ways that not only mind this gap, but work to mend this gap. What this will look like, I do not know. But I do know that we as a community must be ready to listen for this voice crying out in the wilderness. This time of year is also particularly important for each of us as people to listen. Perhaps this is because with each day that passes, the darkness grows longer, and there's that much more time to wait until the morning light. It also seems to me, though, that for many of us, this time is pregnant with transition. Some of us have lost loved ones recently, and the pain of that loss is still fresh. Others are in the midst of tremendous change with the uncertainty and the anxiety that can come with it. And all of us are looking for what might be ahead, knowing that, as Kierkegaard said, even though life may be understood backwards, we still must live it forwards. That's why for all of us here this morning, this time of Advent, these 3 weeks remaining are an essential time to be still, to let the noise, the clamor, the incessant pitches, the madness, let it all wash past. Maybe you've already found a new practice for Advent. Maybe today is the day to start one, from now until the Feast of the Nativity, to take everything apart so that all that is left is the birth of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. For some, it will be to wake up 15 minutes earlier in the morning or to set aside 15 minutes of your lunch hour, perhaps 15 minutes at the end of the day, whatever it is, to pray, to be silent, to read Scripture, to center yourself on a holy phrase, any of these ways to come to that still point where you can actually listen to the voice that cries out, prepare the way. After he had filtered out the rest of the noise, Gavin Bryars listened to the old man's song, warbling in a plaintive voice over and over. Incredibly, though, when he looked back at the visual footage that accompanied that audio, a man is nowhere to be found. He had been there on the streets that day, but outside of the camera's frame, on the edge, singing his hymn softly. It went something like this. Jesus' blood never failed me, yet never failed me, yet Jesus' blood never failed me yet. There's one thing I know, for he loves me so. That was it. Over and over and over again. A hymn sung just outside the frame, missed by all who were standing right beside him. Friends, in order to hear the voice crying out in the wilderness, we must first listen.